Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Sleuthy Stories. If you're new here, this is the podcast where real-life mysteries unfold, one clue at a time. The audio for today's story has been pulled from my main YouTube channel and remastered for this podcast experience. If you'd like to see the visuals that accompany this case, head over to my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy. But for now, sit back, listen closely, and let's unravel the mystery together. Thanks for being here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you haven't already, make sure to hit follow so you never miss an episode. Today's case takes us to the Bronx, New York. It is one that is as chilling as it is heartbreaking, a story that unfolds in layers, each revelation more unsettling than the last. We're talking about the tragic case of Angelique Sutton, a young woman filled with hope and love on what should have been the happiest day of her life. But instead of joy, the day took a horrifying turn, leaving behind unanswered questions, a gruesome crime scene, and a truth that will stay with you long after this episode ends. This is a case that demands to be told, so let's dive in. It was Friday, November 20th, 2015, a seemingly ordinary fall afternoon in the Bronx. The temperature hovered around 63 degrees, with scattered clouds drifting lazily across the sky. The streets pulsed with life, as they always did in this bustling borough. Delivery trucks honked impatiently, shopkeepers chatted with familiar faces, and the aroma of street food lingered in the crisp air. Thanksgiving was just 6 days away, and the excitement for family gatherings mingled with the usual weekday energy. But for 27-year-old Angel Prelo, this day would be anything but ordinary. His phone rang mid-afternoon, the voice on the other end trembling with urgency. It was Ashley, his 22-year-old girlfriend, who was days past her due date. "It's an emergency," she gasped. "You need to come right now." Angel's heart pounded as she told him she had unexpectedly gone into labor, at home. She had delivered the baby herself, she said, her voice breaking with emotion. Stunned, Angel's mind raced. She was just days past her due date, but this wasn't how their carefully laid plans were supposed to unfold. Without hesitation, he grabbed his keys and sped through the chaotic Bronx streets toward Ashley's Monticello Avenue apartment. When he arrived, Ashley was waiting on the front stoop, cradling their newborn in her arms. The baby was swaddled in a blanket, but Angel immediately noticed the blood streaking Ashley's clothes. "I need your help inside," she said, her voice shaking. "Something bad happened." Angel went inside, his stomach twisting with unease. What he saw froze him in place. A trail of blood stretched from the bedroom to the bathroom, painting a grisly scene. Then he saw her, a woman lying motionless on the bed, her body marked with stab wounds to her face and neck. His breath quickened, his hands trembling as he fumbled to call 911. "My girlfriend's been attacked," he told the dispatcher, his voice cracking. "She delivered our baby alone," he said, his voice a mix of disbelief and concern. Wrapping the baby in a jacket, clutching her tightly, he stepped back outside to wait for help, his mind racing with questions he couldn't yet begin to answer. What really happened inside that apartment? And, most haunting of all, why? This is the tragic story of Angelique Sutton, a 22-year-old woman whose life ended far too soon on what should have been her happiest day. But what unfolded was a story of unimaginable betrayal, heartbreak, and the senseless violence that shattered not just one future, but many. Speaking of betrayal, today's video is sponsored by Aura, a comprehensive service that protects you and your loved ones from those who wish to exploit your trust online. Ever get one of those strange text messages from USPS saying they have a package for you? Click this link to confirm. USPS never sends those types of messages. That's spam from scammers who likely got your information from a data broker or a leak on the dark web. Do you know how much of your personal information is out there? Your full name, phone number, home address, email, even details about your relatives can be sold to scammers, like the ones behind that USPS text message. That's why I turned to Aura. Aura not only monitors your information on the dark web, but it also automatically sends opt-out requests to data brokers on your behalf. It has helped me remove my information from over 18 data brokers and even alerted me that one of my email addresses was found on the dark web. With Aura, I also enjoy features like antivirus, VPN, password management, and identity theft insurance, all in one affordable package. If you sign up through my link right now at aura.com/sleuthylucy, Aura will give you a 2-week free trial. For a more direct route, click the link in the description below. Angel had been out running errands when his phone rang. Ashley's frantic voice burst through the line. She said she had gone into labor, but something was wrong. Without hesitation, Angel raced to her Monticello Avenue apartment, his heart pounding with worry. Her due date had passed by 5 days, but nothing could have prepared him for what lay ahead. When he arrived, dread settled deep in his chest. Ashley sat on the front steps, clutching a tiny newborn wrapped in a blanket. Blood stained her clothes, far too much for a typical childbirth. She was trembling, her breaths coming in gasps as she struggled to explain. "I was attacked," she whispered. "She's inside." Angel wasted no time. He pushed open the door and stepped straight into a nightmare. Blood smeared the floors and walls, forming a gruesome trail from Ashley's bedroom to the bathroom. On the bed, a young woman lay motionless, her face and neck marked by brutal stab wounds. Angel froze, the horror of the scene sinking in before adrenaline snapped him into action. Grabbing his phone, he called 911, his voice shaking as he described the carnage and pleaded for help. Overwhelmed, he rushed back outside to wait, holding the baby in the safest place he could think of, his arms. Minutes later, the wail of sirens cut through the city's usual hum, signaling the arrival of first responders. EMTs immediately turned their attention to Ashley and the baby, while officers cautiously entered the apartment, prepared for anything. The scene inside was nothing short of devastation. Chaos and violence clung to every corner of the room, the metallic stench of blood hanging thick in the air. Officers moved with precision, weapons drawn, their eyes sweeping the space for any lingering threats. Then, on the bed, motionless and drenched in crimson, lay the assailant. Cautiously, the officers approached, their eyes locked on the motionless body. The sheer amount of blood suggested the worst, and for a moment, they believed she was already gone. But as they drew closer, something stopped them in their tracks. A slight movement, almost imperceptible. The woman on the bed was alive. Against all odds, a faint pulse remained. Paramedics sprang into action, stabilizing her as best they could before rushing her to Montefiore Hospital. As detectives began piecing together the puzzle, a shocking revelation emerged. This wasn't the work of a random intruder. Ashley admitted that the attacker was someone she knew, someone from her past. Her name was Angelique Sutton, a childhood friend she had first met in elementary school. But what could have led to such a violent confrontation remained a mystery. With Angelique barely clinging to life, paramedics rushed her to the hospital, working desperately to stabilize her. Despite their relentless efforts in the ambulance, her condition remained critical. Then, upon arriving at Montefiore Hospital, the unthinkable became reality. She was pronounced dead. Born on a brisk March morning in the heart of New York City, Angelique Sutton, affectionately known as Angel, brought light into the lives of everyone who knew her. Her family often joked that the name Angel was no coincidence. Her kind-hearted, compassionate spirit seemed almost celestial. She radiated warmth, always greeting others with a genuine smile and a readiness to help. Angelique was the kind of person who could make even the darkest days brighter, a trait deeply rooted in her upbringing in a family of strong Christian faith and unwavering values. Surrounded by a lineage of pastors, including her father and grandfather, Angelique grew up deeply connected to her church community. She was a constant presence at Sunday services and community events. She was a loyal friend and was known for her humility and quiet strength. Her church family often described her as a beacon of hope, someone who never hesitated to lend a helping hand or offer a comforting word. But Angelique's life wasn't defined solely by her faith. She was also an ambitious, intelligent young woman with big dreams for her future. In 2015, she proudly graduated from St. John's University in Queens with a degree in criminal justice, a field that combined her intellectual curiosity with her innate desire to help others. Alongside her academic achievements, Angelique was a dedicated and hardworking young woman, proudly working at Melba's, her aunt's renowned Harlem restaurant known for its exceptional American comfort food. A beloved staple in the food industry, Melba's has welcomed icons like Stevie Wonder and civil rights leader Jesse Jackson, and its owner, Melba Wilson, has graced major platforms, including The Wendy Williams Show. Angelique took great pride in contributing to the family business, immersing herself in its warm, community-driven atmosphere while balancing her responsibilities with grace and determination. Her warmth and dedication made her a beloved presence among both staff and customers, who admired and adored her. Outside of her studies and work, Angelique's life was shaped by an extraordinary love story. She and her fiancé, Patrick, shared a bond that seemed almost fated. Their connection began in childhood, introduced by their grandmothers who were close friends. Over the years, they grew from innocent playmates to lifelong partners. Their love was the kind that friends and family admired, a storybook romance rooted in friendship, trust, and mutual respect. To those who knew them, they were the perfect match. Patrick often spoke of Angelique as his soulmate. For him, 2015 would be the year they would take the next step in their journey together. He proposed, eager to build a family and a future with a woman he adored. Angelique was equally ecstatic, pouring her heart into wedding plans while dreaming of her new role as a wife. Her days were filled with excitement and hope as she looked forward to a life surrounded by love, faith, and the promise of new beginnings. After practically spending their entire lives together as friends and then lovers, Patrick and Angelique decided that November 20th, 2015 was the perfect day. Today was the day when wedding bells would ring for two soulmates ready to start their next chapter. After much thought, they had chosen a civil ceremony, practical, intimate, and financially sound. With their future ahead of them, skipping an extravagant wedding felt like the practical choice. The courthouse, a justice of the peace, and the promise of forever were all they needed. Excitement buzzed in the air as Angelique prepared for her midday wedding appointment. She was radiant, filled with anticipation for the moment she would finally say, "I do." But before heading to meet her fiancé at the altar, she had one quick detour to make. she promised to stop by her old friend Ashley's place on her way to the Bronx courthouse. Angelique and Ashley had known each other since elementary school, but life had taken them in different directions over the years. Recently, however, they reconnected through Facebook and wasted no time picking up where they left off. In the weeks and months that followed their reunion, their renewed friendship flourished. They shared meals at Applebee's, swapped stories over coffee, and browsed local boutiques, bonding over laughter, memories, and the excitement of new beginnings. Their connection deepened, built on nostalgia and the promise of a fresh chapter in their lives. That morning, Ashley reached out, excitedly telling Angelique she had a special wedding gift for her. Intrigued, Angelique told her she'd stop by before making her way to the courthouse. Everything about that day was falling into place. Love in her heart, excitement in the air, and a wedding just hours away. But what should have been the happiest day of her life on November 20th, 2015, would instead unravel into a chilling nightmare. Angelique was dressed and ready, filled with excitement for the moment she would finally say, "I do." But before heading to the courthouse, she made a quick stop, just as planned, at Ashley's place. It was supposed to be just a brief visit, a simple detour before the start of her new life. Meanwhile, Patrick was already at the courthouse, waiting for his bride-to-be. The minutes ticked by, the appointed time for their nuptials drawing closer. Still, no sign of Angelique. At first, he brushed it off. Maybe she was running late, caught up in last-minute preparations. But as the seconds stretched into minutes and her seat next to him remained empty, impatience crept in. Angelique was late, a rarity for her. He called her. No answer. He texted her. No answer. Frustration turned to unease. Where was she? Was something wrong? Or worse, was she having second thoughts? As time passed, doubt sank its claws into him. Had she changed her mind? Had she abandoned their plans without a word? The call came in at 2:20 p.m., a frantic voice on the other end of the line. Angel, Ashley's boyfriend, told the dispatcher that his girlfriend had been attacked and had suddenly gone into labor, forcing an unexpected delivery of their baby. His words were rushed, panicked, but nothing could have prepared first responders for what they were about to walk into. When officers and paramedics arrived at the 4400 block of Monticello Avenue, they stepped into a horrific, blood-soaked scene. A newborn baby was among the chaos, miraculously alive. Ashley stood there, bloodied, shaken, but her words eerily deliberate. And there, in the midst of it all, was Angelique, barely clinging to life. Her pulse was weak, her body motionless. Paramedics worked frantically to stabilize her as they rushed her to the hospital. But it was too late. She succumbed to her injuries and was pronounced deceased at the hospital. With Angelique's passing, what began as an assault investigation now took a far more chilling turn. The case was officially upgraded to a homicide. As homicide detectives arrived, they knew immediately something wasn't right. The pieces weren't adding up. Amid the chaos, as EMTs urgently assessed Ashley's condition, detectives seized the moment, pressing for details to extract as much information as possible before she was to be transported to the hospital. When asked about Angelique, Ashley didn't deny knowing her attacker. She stated it outright. Angelique was her childhood friend. According to Ashley, Angelique had stopped by that afternoon, and an argument broke out over long-buried resentment and unresolved issues from their past. Things escalated, she claimed. But what she said next made the air in the room go still. Her next words changed everything. According to Ashley, Angelique had texted her out of the blue, saying she was outside Ashley's house and wanted to come in. The surprise visit caught Ashley off guard, but she opened the door for her friend without hesitation. As Angelique stepped inside, however, the atmosphere quickly shifted. Ashley recounted how Angelique's demeanor turned unexpectedly hostile. Out of nowhere, she began accusing Ashley of bullying her back in elementary school, a claim Ashley said she didn't see coming. "I thought we were friends," she told the detectives, her voice trembling. "Why bring this up now?" What began as a heated conversation quickly escalated. Ashley described feeling confused and cornered as Angelique's tone became more aggressive. The accusations seemed exaggerated, events Ashley said she couldn't even remember. But Angelique wasn't letting it go. Then came the moment Ashley said she feared for her life. Feeling threatened, she grabbed the first thing she could find, a kitchen knife. She claimed that Angelique lunged at her, leaving her no choice but to defend herself. Ashley told detectives, her voice breaking, that when the struggle broke out, it felt like kill or be killed. Ashley said she tried to kick Angelique, only for Angelique to stab her twice in the leg. She went on to say that she managed to kick the knife from Angelique's grasp, seize it, and turn the weapon against her. According to Ashley, Angelique fell to the floor but continued reaching for her, forcing her to keep stabbing, again and again, until she stopped moving. But the shock didn't end there. Ashley revealed that shortly after the altercation, she felt a sudden rush of water between her legs. She was going into labor. "Everything happened so fast," she told the detectives, her words barely audible. In the chaos of the moment, she delivered her baby right there in her home, holding the newborn in her arms while trying to process the unimaginable events that had just unfolded. She said she then called her boyfriend, Angel, for help. Ashley's story left detectives with more questions than answers. A confrontation over childhood grievances escalating to this level of violence seemed unusual. Why didn't she call 911? Something about her account didn't sit right with them. Was there more to the story than she was letting on? While detectives worked to corroborate Ashley's claims, they couldn't shake the feeling that this was only the beginning. With the investigation officially underway, they moved quickly to secure the scene, cordoning off the area, photographing every inch, and meticulously documenting evidence. Every detail mattered. As they combed through the crime scene, their efforts led to a chilling discovery. A knife, its blade slick with blood, what appeared to be the murder weapon. But then, as they moved deeper into the apartment, they stumbled upon something that sent a shudder through the room. Lying on the bedroom floor was a mass of raw, glistening tissue, its darkened surface smeared with blood. The detectives exchanged uneasy glances, their stomachs twisting at the sight. Whatever it was, it didn't belong outside of a body. The air felt heavier, the horror of what had taken place inside these walls settling in even deeper. Trying to maintain their composure, they pressed forward into the bathroom. And there, on the cold tile floor, was even more. More tissue. More severed organic matter, fleshy, coiled, and disturbingly out of place. A nauseating realization crept over them. This wasn't just bloodshed. Something had been removed. Something that no crime scene manual had prepared them for. The apartment wasn't just a murder scene. It was something far more grotesque. As EMTs assessed Ashley, something felt off to them as well. Despite her frantic account and the blood smeared across her body and clothes, she showed no signs of the distress one would expect from someone who had just endured such a traumatic event. Her demeanor wavered between calm and erratic. And when detectives pressed her for details, her story shifted with each retelling. She said she had been attacked, then later suggested it had all been a misunderstanding. However, the gruesome scene told a different story. one of unimaginable violence. As they combed through the apartment, every discovery only heightened their suspicions. Blood wasn't just present. It was everywhere, pooling on the floors, streaked across the walls, and seeping into the furniture. But the most disturbing find lay in the bedroom and bathroom, what appeared to be severed body parts, a discovery that was deeply unsettling. Its presence raised far more questions than Ashley's shifting explanations could answer. Nothing in her account justified the sheer brutality surrounding them. The inconsistencies in her statements, the overwhelming carnage, and the eerie sense that something wasn't right left detectives with little doubt Ashley Wade may not have been victim after all. She was more likely the perpetrator. Because of this, detectives determined that she wouldn't be taken to the hospital, not as a patient at least. Instead, officers placed her in the back of a police car, her hands still stained with blood, and took her into custody on the spot. Though Ashley had sustained injuries to her leg, none were life-threatening, and she was expected to make a full recovery. However, rather than being booked immediately, she was transported to Jacoby Hospital for a psychiatric evaluation, as authorities suspected she may have experienced a severe psychological break. The newborn, an innocent miracle amid the horror, suffered lacerations to her right thigh and was rushed to Montefiore Hospital. By her side, Angel Prelo held her close, never letting go, doing what any father would in a moment like this. Meanwhile, across town, Patrick sat in anxious anticipation, waiting for the moment he had envisioned for so long. Today was supposed to mark the beginning of forever, an intimate courthouse ceremony where he and Angelique would exchange vows and solidify their love. But as the minutes slipped away with no sign of his bride, excitement gave way to unease. He checked his phone, expecting a message, a call, anything to explain the delay. But there was nothing. Had something come up? Had she changed her mind? He tried to shake the thought, but the growing silence was impossible to ignore. Then, his phone rang. For a fleeting moment, hope flickered, until he saw the name on the screen. It wasn't Angelique. He answered, his breath catching in his throat. On the other end, his father's voice was grim, delivering news that shattered Patrick's world in an instant. Angelique had been rushed to the hospital. She had been attacked, violently, brutally, by someone she considered a friend, he said. She was in critical condition. Patrick's heart pounded as he clung to the sliver of hope that she would pull through. But then, his father's voice wavered, delivering the final, crushing blow. Despite every effort to save her, Angelique is gone, son, he said. Patrick could barely process the words. A wave of dizziness gripped him as his vision blurred, his body threatening to give out beneath him. In the background, his mother's anguished screams pierced the air, each cry hammering the reality of what he had just heard deeper into his chest. It felt unreal, impossible. He raced to the hospital, praying that it was all a mistake, that somehow this nightmare would end. When Patrick arrived, reality set in. The love of his life had indeed been taken from him. The news of Angelique's death had shattered him, but he couldn't have prepared for what awaited him next. As he stepped inside, detectives were already there, waiting to speak with him. They began by informing him of Ashley's version of events. Angelique had shown up at Ashley's home unannounced and attacked her. Ashley claimed she had acted in self-defense, stabbing Angelique multiple times before going into labor and delivering a baby girl. But as the detectives recounted Ashley's story, Patrick's confusion quickly turned to disbelief. "That can't be true," he said, shaking his head. "That doesn't make any sense. Angelique would never attack anyone. That's not who she was." And then Patrick dropped a bombshell that stopped the detectives in their tracks. Angelique was nearly 9 months pregnant, due to give birth to their child at any moment. His voice cracked as he asked, "What happened to the baby? Is the baby okay?" The detectives exchanged tense glances. There had been a baby at the scene, a newborn girl, but Ashley had claimed the child was hers. Patrick's eyes widened as the realization hit him like a freight train. His face paled, and his voice grew louder, more frantic. "Wait a minute. My girlfriend was pregnant. She was about to give birth. If there's a baby, that's my baby." Patrick's voice fractured with anguish as he repeated himself, his emotions spilling over. "No, that's my baby. Angelique was pregnant. If there's only one baby, it has to be mine." The detectives could see the pain and urgency in his eyes. One of them placed a steadying hand on Patrick's shoulder. "Listen, Patrick, we understand what you're going through," the detective said, his tone soft but firm. "We're still investigating this. We're not saying this isn't your child. We're going to let you see the baby as soon as we can, if in fact she's yours." For Patrick, this was a nightmare he couldn't wake from. Not only had he lost Angelique, the woman he was supposed to marry that very day, but now his paternity was being questioned, and his baby's fate hung in the balance. The weight of it all was unbearable, yet all he could think about was finding the truth. Was this baby truly his? And if so, how had things gone so tragically, horrifically wrong? Detectives knew that, to piece together the full story, they needed to understand the connection between Angelique and Ashley. With Angelique gone, the answers now rested with the one person who knew her best, Patrick. Sitting across from him, they could see the devastation etched on his face, the weight of his grief pressing down like an invisible force. But they had to press forward. Gently but firmly, they began. "Tell us about Ashley Wade. What do you know about her?" Patrick recounted that earlier, in the fall of that year, while Angelique was excitedly planning for her upcoming labor and wedding day, she received an unexpected notification on her social media page. It was a Facebook friend request and a message from an old acquaintance, Ashley Wade. The two had gone to elementary school together, but they weren't particularly close. Still, Angelique saw no harm in accepting the request. It was, after all, just Facebook. Ashley soon sent Angelique a message congratulating her on her pregnancy and revealed that she was also expecting. She even mentioned that their pregnancies were at the same stage. Over the next few weeks, their conversations blossomed into a seemingly genuine friendship. They began meeting for dinners, going shopping together, and bonding over their shared journey into motherhood. But now, as Patrick recounted this to the detectives, his voice carried a mix of anger and sorrow. He believed the entire friendship had been nothing but a ruse. In his mind, Angelique had been targeted by Ashley. "Was Ashley ever even pregnant?" Patrick asked, his voice filled with suspicion and disbelief. The detectives couldn't deny that the case was becoming more and more twisted by the minute. Each new piece of information raised more questions than answers. While detectives were piecing together the chilling details from Patrick, the medical examiner in the hospital mortuary was conducting an assessment of Angelique's injuries. What they discovered was nothing short of horrifying, something that could only be described as a scene straight out of a horror movie. The examination revealed that Angelique's throat had been brutally slashed, damaging her vocal cords and rendering her unable to cry for help in her final moments. Her body bore over 50 stab wounds, most of them concentrated on her face and neck. But the most disturbing discovery lay beneath the surface of those stab wounds. Upon further examination, the medical examiner uncovered that Angelique's abdomen had been viciously cut open. Her uterus, along with other organs, was missing. It had been carved out of her. As this grim examination unfolded, detectives at the crime scene were uncovering evidence that directly contradicted Ashley's story. The kitchen and surrounding areas were a chaotic mess, with blood spattered everywhere. However, through meticulous analysis, detectives were able to trace the blood patterns and movements, reconstructing the harrowing moments leading up to Angelique's death. The evidence painted a horrifying picture. It was clear that Angelique had been desperately trying to escape. The blood trail showed she had been running away from Ashley, not attacking her, as Ashley had claimed. And then, the most gut-wrenching discovery of all. In a room near the crime scene, detectives located the missing parts of Angelique's body, her uterus, and placenta. They had been discarded like trash, further unraveling Ashley's already shaky account of what happened. The evidence was undeniable. Ashley's version of events was falling apart. She had not acted in self-defense, as she claimed. Instead, the evidence suggested something far more calculated and menacing. The more detectives uncovered, the more they realized the truth. Angelique had been lured into a trap, her kindness and trust used against her in the most unimaginable way. Ashley's lies were crumbling, and with each new discovery, the case against her grew stronger. Armed with a mountain of evidence that contradicted Ashley's claims, detectives sought a search warrant to determine whether she had ever been pregnant. In the meantime, forensic testing was already underway to confirm whether the baby's blood matched that of the deceased, Angelique. With the truth closing in, they prepared to confront Ashley once again. By now, they had pieced together enough to know that her story didn't add up, and it was time to see if she would finally crack under pressure. When detectives entered the hospital room where Ashley was being treated, they were met with an unexpected scene. Doctors were trying to persuade Ashley to undergo a pelvic exam to confirm if she had recently given birth. Despite her earlier insistence that she had delivered a baby, Ashley adamantly refused the exam. The detectives weren't buying her story, and now it was time to make that clear. Once alone with her, they laid their cards on the table. They informed Ashley that they didn't believe her account. They revealed that they knew Angelique had been 9 months pregnant, and that the baby Ashley claimed as her own was likely Angelique's child. At that moment, Ashley's demeanor shifted. She began to cry and admitted that she hadn't been entirely honest with them. Finally, she confessed she was not pregnant at the time of the attack. However, Ashley still stuck to parts of her original story. She claimed that Angelique had shown up at her apartment that day, and the two had gotten into an argument about something that had happened years ago in elementary school. According to Ashley, Angelique became aggressive and attacked her, forcing Ashley to grab a knife in self-defense. But then Ashley added a new layer to her story, one that left detectives even more disturbed. She claimed that once Angelique stopped moving, her attention turned to the unborn child. Ashley said that she had suffered multiple miscarriages in the past, and in that moment, she saw an opportunity to save the baby. Using her limited medical knowledge, she claimed, she performed a makeshift C-section to remove the baby from Angelique's body. Ashley framed the act as an attempt to save the child, painting herself as a would-be savior. She told detectives that after removing the baby, she cleaned her up, rinsed her off, and fed her formula she already had in the apartment. She said the longer she held the baby, the more convinced she became that this was her child. In her mind, it felt right, like she was finally becoming the mother she had always longed to be. She admitted that when her boyfriend, Angel, arrived, the situation solidified in her mind. According to Ashley, Angel reassured her that they would be a family, promising to take care of her and the baby. For Ashley, this was everything she had ever wanted. She confessed that she had maintained the lie to keep Angel happy and to hold on to the dream of having the family she had always longed for. Despite Ashley's confession, detectives quickly realized that her story still did not make sense. Looking for clarity, they turned to her social media, hoping to piece together the truth. What they uncovered in her digital footprint painted a far more calculated picture. After pulling her records, it became clear. This was not a spontaneous act. For months, Ashley meticulously crafted an elaborate deception, convincing those around her that she was pregnant. She convinced family, friends, and neighbors that she had previously lost a baby shortly after birth in 2014 and was now expecting a baby girl. To make her lie more convincing, she flooded her Facebook with 3D sonogram images of the baby's face, proudly displayed baby clothes, and even created a registry at Babies R Us. Inside her apartment, she had gone to unsettling lengths, setting up an elaborate nursery, fully stocked and ready for a newborn. She had even assigned herself a due date, November 16th. But when the day came and went with no baby to show for it, Ashley doubled down on her deception, posting on social media, "She's not ready to come out yet." But detectives soon uncovered the truth. The sonogram photo she posted wasn't hers. It was an exact match to an image found on Google Images, one she had falsely claimed as her own, a chilling revelation that exposed the depth of her deception. The evidence was clear. This wasn't a moment of panic or desperation. Ashley had planned this for months, luring Angelique into her life under the guise of friendship, all while plotting to take what she believed was rightfully hers. With every word Ashley spoke, the detectives grew more certain of one thing. This was no act of self-defense. This was a calculated, premeditated crime, driven by obsession and delusion. On January 5, 2016, Ashley Wade was officially indicted on second-degree murder and second-degree kidnapping. She pleaded not guilty to these charges during her arraignment. By this time, Ashley had already confessed to the brutal killing of her pregnant friend, Angelique Sutton, stabbing her to death before cutting her unborn child from her womb. A crime so horrific, it sent shockwaves through the Bronx. Ashley's actions were described as unprecedented in their brutality, prompting authorities to pursue the most severe charges possible. In addition to first-degree murder and kidnapping, she was also charged with criminal possession of a weapon. Due to the sheer horror of the crime, the prosecution made it clear that no plea deals would be offered. This was a case they intended to take to trial, fully intent on seeking justice for Angelique and her family. Before Ashley could be sent to jail, she was taken to a psychiatric ward for evaluation. This step, while controversial, was not unusual in cases where the suspect exhibited signs of severe mental disturbance. Detectives and prosecutors were determined to ensure Ashley was held accountable, regardless of any mental health claims that might arise. As prosecutors pieced together the events leading up to the horrific crime, a clear and tragic picture began to emerge. Prosecutors concluded that Ashley Wade's actions were driven by a desperate attempt to salvage her crumbling relationship with Angel. Reportedly, they had been in a relationship for 6 years, and Angel was eager to become a father. Their relationship had been strained by a series of miscarriages, and the couple had frequently been heard arguing loudly. Neighbors even recalled seeing Angel's belongings packed on the staircase after particularly heated disputes. After her most recent miscarriage, Ashley reached a breaking point. She decided that the only way to keep Angel by her side was to give him the one thing she believed he wanted most, a baby. When Ashley saw Angelique Sutton, her old elementary school classmate, on social media and learned she was 8 months pregnant, prosecutors believe Ashley saw an opportunity to execute her plan. Under the guise of rekindling an old friendship, Ashley reached out to Angelique, claiming she was also pregnant. Angelique, kind and trusting by nature, became close to Ashley and never suspected the sinister intentions lurking beneath the surface. On the morning of November 20th, 2015, Ashley allegedly decided to carry out the final phase of her plan. Prosecutors theorize that Ashley may have lured Angelique to her home by pretending to have baby items or a wedding gift for her. However, text messages discovered before Ashley's trial revealed that Angelique had actually initiated the visit, insisting on coming over, despite Ashley's protests about not being in a good place emotionally after an argument with Angel. When Angelique arrived, Ashley cut her throat to prevent her from screaming for help. Ashley then proceeded to stab Angelique approximately 50 times, an act of violence so extreme that detectives described it as more than just wanting someone dead. It was complete annihilation. After Angelique was no longer moving, Ashley performed a crude C-section, cutting with such precision that prosecutors theorized she must have researched the procedure beforehand. Their suspicions were further fueled by reports that Ashley had graduated from a four-year institution with a degree in biology, suggesting she had at least some understanding of human anatomy. Remarkably, the baby was unharmed, but the brutality of the act was undeniable. For months, Ashley had carefully laid the groundwork for her plan, faking a pregnancy and preparing a nursery in her apartment. The discovery of the text messages between Ashley and Angelique added a layer of complexity to the case, as they revealed Angelique had been the one to insist on visiting Ashley that day. However, this detail did little to absolve Ashley of her actions, which prosecutors described as a chilling and deliberate attempt to take the life of her old friend and claim her child as her own. On September 2, 2016, Ashley Wade's trial began in a packed Bronx courtroom, with her charges reduced from first-degree to second-degree murder. Prosecutors were unable to prove the premeditation required for a first-degree murder conviction, largely due to text messages that suggested Angelique Sutton had initiated the meeting that fateful morning. Throughout the trial, Ashley's defense team pushed for leniency, hiring a psychiatrist to argue that she suffered from a serious mental condition, potentially supporting an insanity defense. However, her constantly shifting stories eroded her credibility, revealing a consciousness of guilt and casting doubt in the minds of the jury. Prosecutors asserted that this was an attack that she deliberately took in stages. She was strategic, they argued. Ashley first cut Angelique's voice box so that she could not scream or cry for help. Then Ashley cut her major blood vessels, completely disabling her so she could not move. All of Angelique's injuries were from the neck up. When stabbing her, Ashley targeted her face and neck, deliberately avoiding any harm to the baby. She harvested her uterus from her body, completely removing it. Then she carefully removed the baby and discarded the uterus and umbilical cord on the bathroom floor. Her placenta was found on the bedroom floor. Prosecutor Holtzman stated, "Ashley needed Angelique to die, and she needed her baby to live. She had baby clothes, baby shoes, diapers, formula, a crib, everything an expectant mother would need, except a baby. She didn't have a baby. For that, she needed Angelique Sutton." Prosecutors told the jury that after the attack, Ashley wrapped the newborn in a blanket and fed her a bottle of formula before calling her boyfriend, Angel. With a chilling calmness, she told him she had just given birth, but admitted she had done something terrible. Prosecutors also stated that after the murder, Ashley told detectives she wanted to rescue the baby because she had lost a child of her own. However, they argued that her alleged pregnancy was nothing more than a fabrication. Officer Alejandra Perez took the stand, recounting how Ashley repeatedly refused a medical examination after telling emergency responders who had just stepped into her blood-soaked apartment that she had just had a baby. Ashley continued to resist doctors at the hospital who attempted to examine her, Officer Perez testified, telling jurors that Ashley dismissed their efforts, saying, "They won't believe it's my baby anyway." Angel, Ashley's ex-boyfriend, stated that he had never attended any of Ashley's prenatal appointments. His father, Stephen, later explained that Angel's demanding work schedule in the kitchens at New York University kept him from going with her to the doctor. "That's how she really got away with it," Stephen said, reflecting on how the deception had gone unnoticed for so long. Patrick, Angelique's fiancé, took the stand, but Ashley never once met his eyes. His voice was unsteady as he relived the day that was supposed to be the happiest of his life, but instead became his worst nightmare. Tears welled in his eyes as he spoke of Angelique, the woman he had planned to spend forever with, and the unimaginable loss he was now forced to carry. But in the courtroom sat a living reminder of the love they had created, Genesis, their miracle baby. Dressed in pink, at 22 months old, she watched with innocent eyes as her father fought through his grief, determined to win justice for the mother she would never get to know. She was the light left behind in the wake of tragedy, a symbol of the life Angelique had fought to protect. Bishop Sutton, Angelique's father, shared his own heartbreaking revelation. When he first heard the news of a woman brutally killed, he, like so many others, felt sorrow for the family affected. It never once occurred to him that the story was about his own daughter. The realization struck with the force of a wrecking ball, the victim they spoke of, the young woman whose life had been so cruelly taken, was his Angelique. Though the pain was unbearable, both men stood in that courtroom not just as grieving father and fiancé, but as warriors for the justice Angelique deserved. And as the truth unraveled, as the horror of that day was laid bare before the jury, one thing was certain. Though her life was stolen, her story would not end in silence. During the trial, the court was confronted with profoundly disturbing evidence. As a forensic pathologist presented graphic testimony accompanied by explicit photographs of Angelique's mutilated body, the courtroom atmosphere grew increasingly tense. The harrowing images, including an enlarged photograph depicting Angelique's detached uterus, placenta, and umbilical cord, overwhelmed one juror to the point of fainting. The juror collapsed, prompting immediate medical attention and a temporary halt to the proceedings. The presiding judge promptly cleared the courtroom, and after a 45-minute recess, it was confirmed that the juror had regained consciousness and was transported to a local hospital for evaluation. This incident underscored the emotional and psychological toll exacted by the trial's graphic content on all participants. After deliberating for just over 5 hours, the jury returned with their verdict. Ashley Wade was found guilty of second-degree murder and kidnapping. While Angelique's loved ones had hoped for a first-degree murder conviction, they found some solace in knowing that Ashley would still face justice for her heinous actions. Ashley was sentenced to 25 years in prison for the murder and an additional 15 years for the kidnapping, totaling 40 years behind bars. Though the sentence fell short of what Angelique's grieving family had hoped for, it ensured that Ashley would remain incarcerated for decades. What do you think about this case? The trial's conclusion provided a measure of closure for Angelique's family, but the weight of their loss lingered. The brutality of the crime, coupled with the devastating impact on those left behind, left an indelible mark on the community. Ashley Wade's actions are a heart-wrenching reminder of how desperation and obsession can drive someone to commit an unforgivable crime. In her quest to hold onto a relationship on the verge of collapse, Ashley took the life of her friend, Angelique Sutton, and stole an innocent child's future. What do you think drove Ashley to such a desperate and horrific act? Was it pure premeditation, mental illness, or a mix of both? Do you believe that the 40 years was enough for the magnitude of the crime? How do cases like this shape the way we view trust, especially among friends and those closest to us? Let's continue the conversation down in the comments section below. As always, I'll meet you there. In these stories, there are no perfect victims, just imperfect individuals navigating different roles in life. Angelique was more than just a means to an end in Ashley's twisted plan. She was a loving daughter, sister, aunt, niece, cousin, mother, and friend to many who now mourn her loss. She will forever remain in the hearts of those who cherished and loved her, not because she was perfect, but because she was perfectly wonderful in their eyes. This is why I extend my gratitude to the victims for being beacons of love and light, despite any flaws that may emerge from their stories. So thank you, Angelique, for being an example of love and light. May you rest in eternal peace. That wraps up this episode of Sleuthy Stories. Thanks for joining me as we uncover the twists and turns of real-life cases. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a moment, please leave a rating. It really helps more true crime fans find us. Want to see the visuals that go with today's case? You can find the full video version on my YouTube channel, Sleuthy Lucy. Check the link in the description. I'll be back soon with another case. But until then, keep your wits sharp and your curiosity sharper.